Hello, and I do apologize for being relatively quiet on this platform. It's been a little bit hectic with migrating Ghostmail onto Beehive with some really good results and some very happy readers for those who have been migrated. Everyone will be migrated by the end of the month, so I look forward to finishing up with that and then getting back to normal. Now, onwards to some of the recent company news and recognizing that we are not really in earnings season on the JSE, so much of what is coming through is actually deal-related, or perhaps previews of some of what might be coming in the next earnings season, which is only a few weeks away now. Let's do Accelerate Property Fund, a very interesting special situation on the JSE, and one in which I am invested, by the way, with an average in price of 41 cents per share. Has been as high as 76 cents per share, so of course I should have sold, but hindsight is always perfect. Nonetheless, I remain in the green, and I'm pretty happy with that. So, latest news here is that they have sold the BMW 4Ways dealership showroom for 174 million rand to a subsidiary of Toyota. That probably gives us a clue about the future of the cars that you may find at that property, but I think more importantly, at least for me and the other Accelerate shareholders, the valuation of that property as at the last valuation date is 180 million. Now, this means that they have sold it very close to its net asset value. Why does this matter? Because the fund is trading at a very large discount to its net asset value. So as many buildings as they can sell at close to NAV and then have that cash for returns to shareholders in the form of dividends or share buybacks, for example, would actually close that discount to NAV over time. In other words, we want to see this kind of thing. Additional point to note here is they've achieved a disposal yield of just 6.4%. Now I say just 6.4% because a lower yield means a higher price. So when you are buying a property, you want to see a nice high yield, and when you're selling it, you want to see a low yield. In this case, I think we can all agree that 6.4% is a low yield. Just think about going and buying a property yourself. Would you go and buy it if you were getting a return in the first year of 6.4%? Well, you probably wouldn't. Now, in this case, it's a strategic buyer because it's an industry buyer. It is a Toyota subsidiary acquiring a dealership showroom. So they are seeing it as a strategic property rather than a purely financial investment. That's good news for Accelerate, and that's why they've gotten close to the net asset value on this disposal. If they had sold it to another property fund, I don't think they would have gotten a price this good. And then in further good news, their distributable earnings for the year ended March 2026 has come in between 1.96 cents and 2.31 cents per share. Magnificent swing from the distributable loss per share of 3.97 cents in the prior period. Still no dividend here because the balance sheet needs a lot of love, still, but it is encouraging. One thing to just highlight here is that going forward, the net asset value of this company is going to probably need some adjustment for risk. The reason I say that is that there is still a dispute underway with Azrapart, which is an entity linked to the ex-CEO Michael Giorgio. That entity is now in business rescue, which means they are now negotiating with business rescue practitioners as opposed to the ex-CEO himself. At least that's my understanding of the situation there. And there's this counterclaim or obligation of around 371 million rand that Accelerate has historically been recognizing as a liability. They've now taken the more aggressive approach of saying, well, actually that claim has no merit, so they will be de-recognizing that obligation. Now, I'm waiting to see how that actually rolls through the financial statements, and also going from full recognition to absolutely zero is quite an aggressive approach. I think the prudent thing would be to take the net asset value and then maybe stress test that obligation and assume that, for example, 50% probability of it going ahead, or 75% or a 25%, depending how you feel, and then looking at what the discount to NAV will still be. But on the whole, they're doing good things. I like this disposal, and hopefully we're going to see some more good news coming out of 4Ways Mall and progress being made there, because that really is key to Accelerate's success. Moving on, we now take a look at Alphamin, and this is a particularly interesting company because there's nothing else like it on the JSE. This is a tin mining house in the DRC, and as I say, you're not going to get tin anywhere else on our local market, so if you're interested in this commodity, then this is the company you would look at on the JSE. Why would you be interested in tin? Well, because it is, at the moment, referred to as the metal of computing power. Very nice way to remember it. And what that really tells you is that growth in AI infrastructure, so data centers, end user computing, take your pick, requires tin. And that is good news for Alphamin. So the company has just announced its second quarter EBITDA guidance. And the way this company reports is that they give guidance for a quarter that actually just happened. So in other words, they're pretty much telling you how they did, subject to just some final accounting adjustments. They then do release the final accounts, but by then everyone has pretty much seen the details and there's rarely any kind of difference that matters. So it's a bit of an unusual way of reporting, but it does get the job done. For the quarter ended June 2026, they achieved record EBITDA of $167 million. That's up 6% versus the previous quarter. Interestingly, an almost perfectly flat outcome in contained tin sold. So in other words, sales volumes, flat. And that tells you that the EBITDA uplift has come from tin prices, which speaks directly to that point I made around the metal of computing. Sure enough, if you have a look at their release, then you'll see an average tin price increase of 5% quarter on quarter. Now, the net cash position has decreased from $140 million to $91 million, that is in dollars, after paying significant distributions to shareholders. They also had to pay out some taxes, for example. They are still in a net cash position, which is good. The other thing to keep an eye on is those sales volumes. You don't want to see volumes dipping. Ideally, you want to see them going up, but processing recoveries are going to vary quarter to quarter. This is simply a feature of mining. And of course, because there is never a dull moment when mining in Africa or any other frontier region for that matter, the DRC is currently monitoring an Ebola outbreak in the northeastern part of the country. Thankfully, that has not impacted the area in which Alphamin operates, at least not at this stage. I don't think there's a scarier disease outbreak at all than Ebola, so hopefully they get that under control as quickly as possible. Alphamin is certainly doing well regardless. Total return over 12 months at the time of writing about them in Ghost Bites was a casual 61%. On a year-to-date basis, almost a 20% total return. So a very nice way to have played the AI boom. And now people will need to think about whether or not they take profit on this or continue to hope that that demand for computing power and thus tin will drive prices. Then Purple Group gives us a really good example of a build or buy analysis. They have announced the acquisition of Telescope, an AI business that they will be bringing into their group that now has 1.3 million active clients and over 100 billion rand in assets on the platform. They've done a fantastic job of scaling to this size, which is why I am a very happy shareholder. And I got in at an average price of 1 rand and 6 cents. So currently sitting on a gain of roughly 60%, obviously depending on the latest share price. And that's because I got in at a time where the darling status had somewhat come off Purple Group. You'll remember in COVID that people just couldn't get enough of this thing. And there was talk of the share price going up and up and up forever, which is usually a sign that you need to stay away. And then when that shine comes off, that is the sign that you need to get in there and buy. Usually, not always, of course. Now, management can't manage the share price, but they can certainly grow the underlying business. And that is something that Purple has been doing a great job of over the years. There's been lots of cross-selling coming in, lots of other products. I do think they need to be careful that the platform can become a little bit too cluttered. I certainly remember how simple it used to be versus how cluttered it has become. I think many businesses are guilty of that, actually. I'm certainly not immune to it, and it's something I'm trying to actively manage in the Ghost Mail newsletter every single day, so not have too much in there. But anyway, they are doing a great job. And to add to it now, they've announced this acquisition of 100% of Telescope AI. Well, what is this business? It's an investment research and compliance infrastructure business for platforms including IG Group, tastytrade, and Easy Equities. In other words, Purple Group is vertically integrating here and moving their way up the value chain. And in doing so, they are taking over a company that has over 3 million end users across 7 jurisdictions. So the broader Purple ecosystem just got a whole lot bigger. Now, this costs money, serious money actually. A purchase price of up to $10.75 million. That's $7 million payable up front, $3.75 million payable on a deferred basis. And Telescope's net asset value is very small, only $340,000 roughly. And the attributable loss after tax for the 6 months to February was around $61,000. So they are paying, well, it's an impossible multiple basically because it's a loss after tax. And let's not even talk about that price to book because it's enormous. So lots and lots of goodwill here. What they are doing is looking at this from the perspective of how hard would it be to build this themselves. I think that's part one of the valuation. And part two, they must be paying amounts all the time to Telescope, and they would be saving that. They would be bringing that in-house. Now, based on Telescope's numbers, I can only imagine that what they are paying Telescope is nowhere near what they are going to actually pay for the shares. So I have to assume that the build or buy argument has been the primary driver here. Another piece of good news is that Purple can pay for a chunk of it in shares. Of the $7 million up front, $5 million will be in cash, $2 million will be settled by issuing more Purple shares at the 30-day volume weighted average price, or VWAP. Then on the $3.75 million deferred amount, $2.75 million will be split into five annual installments of $550K each. And here's a really interesting deal term. Each installment will then be reduced by the extent to which the operating cash outflow of Telescope exceeds $250,000 per year. Now, I have to believe that Telescope's selling shareholders had the brains and the experience and the advice, I'm sure, to structure a deal in such a way that they have some control over how the money gets spent. Because otherwise, it's just the simplest thing in the world, right? You just spend like crazy on the business and then you don't have to pay the selling shareholders in years to come. That happens all the time, by the way, in private company transactions that are not structured properly. I have seen and heard some real horror stories in that space. This is obviously corporate finance at the top end, or at least a large enough deal that they've hopefully gotten decent advice, and I'm sure that everything will be done fairly. That remaining 1 million payment, the one that's not deferred over five annual installments, that will be payable based on certain milestones that would need to be achieved by Telescope AI within 5 years. So in reality, of the $10.75 million, actually only $1 million is linked to performance. The rest is payable upfront or over annual installments with maybe some adjustments. It's a pretty unusual deal structure because a big portion of that price is essentially guaranteed. Shareholders are not being asked to vote on the transaction, but I will tell you that in the poll that I ran in Ghostmail, people were not unbelievably thrilled with the deal terms, which I'm not very surprised about if you have a look at what's going on here. So I've put it up on the screen if you're watching this on YouTube, but if you're listening to this podcast, I can tell you that 59% of respondents said, nice strategy, but I'm worried about the valuation. 25% said, it's strategically odd, and I'm worried about the valuation. In other words, that's the quadrant you don't want to be in. A quarter of respondents were not happy. 14% said, I love the strategy and the deal metrics. Obviously, that's the quadrant that Purple would love people to be in. And then 2% said, strategically odd, the numbers look fine. I'm not surprised that that response was so small because that is the quadrant that would make the least sense to me. The one that makes the most sense, I think, is the most popular one at 59%. So Purple's job here will be to prove to the market that the valuation is correct and that it makes sense to do it the way they've done it. And that will only be achieved by actually showing those numbers coming through in the years to come and what the benefit is of this acquisition. And the final update that I want to touch on in this episode is around Sappi. They've unlocked some positivity in the market, at least. The share price closed 15% higher after giving the market some hope that perhaps EBITDA is not as bad as the company thought. Previous guidance was that adjusted EBITDA in the third quarter would be lower than in the second quarter. The updated guidance is that group adjusted EBITDA should be broadly in line with the second quarter. So in other words, instead of shrinking, they reckon that they are going sideways. That's better, if not good. So when the share price is under so much pressure, that's how you see it end up in a scenario where it closes 15% higher on the day. Pretty impressive and meteoric rise there. Obviously, it's still in the context of a horrible share price though, and this is the important point. Year to date, Sappi remains 55% down. That means they've lost more than half their value year to date. If you zoom out, it gets really crazy. Sappi is the lowest it's been on a chart. I mean, if I go on Google Finance and I go max, it goes back to 2000. The Sappi price at the moment is lower than it's ever been. It's broken way down through support levels and it's just plummeting. So all bets are off on where this train stops. It's not a chart that I have any interest in buying. I've put it up on the screen if you're watching on YouTube so you can see for yourself just how ugly it is. And I'd be interested to know if you are speculating in Sappi. Because speculating is the word. I definitely can't bring myself to use the word investing in this context. That's it for this episode. Thank you for listening and or watching, depending on which platform you're on. As always, you can check it out on YouTube and subscribe there, or you can add this podcast to your podcast player on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, whatever works best for you. Thank you for listening. Also, please remember that as with everything you read, watch, or listen to in my ecosystem. None of this is designed to be financial advice. You should always be doing your own research and certainly speaking to a financial advisor as well.